Boy, the sea of faces has grown double since I got up last time. It's an amazing thing to see that growth. We have two speakers on the subject this morning of our boundaries, and I'd like to introduce the first one to you. It's Jimmy S. from... Is it S?
Yes.
Thanks. It's Jimmy S., and he comes to you from Bethesda, Maryland. Jimmy?
I don't know which is which. Hi, I'm an addict. My name is Jimmy. And I'm truly, you know, grateful and honored to be here. It talks in our sixth tradition. How many people knew this meeting was going to be on the sixth tradition? How many knew? Oh, four. Okay. So, our sixth tradition, which is an NA group, ought never endorse, finance, or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. And indeed, much of what the sixth tradition can be about is about establishing boundaries, as it says in our book, boundaries that define how we relate with other groups and enterprises outside the fellowship. And the most important thing is how it defines us and what our primary purpose is. And we'll talk more about some of that. Maybe I shouldn't have said it was going to be a tradition meeting. You know. But... let me talk a little bit about what's going on and some things that this morning, right before coming here, we had gone out a couple months ago. A good friend of mine and a member of this fellowship passed away suddenly, unexpectedly, you know, at quite a young age. And this morning, a group of us went out to the beach with his son and all gathered, sent some words. He was at this convention every year. He loved being the first in line to register on Sunday morning for next year. And we scattered some of his ashes. And his son took the ashes, 9 years old, and scattered some of them on the beach and told us that we have to come back every year. I think about people like Bruce, that was his name, and the dedication that they've shown to this recovery and to fellowship. This fellowship, and it humbles me to see, you know, and think about how they do it, and what, in my mind, what little I do, because I show up and people tell me what to do, and y'all keep finding something for me to do, but that was one of things. And I just, thinking of other people is something that I never, I just didn't do, it just didn't come to me. Everything that talks in our disease being the self-centeredness, that spiritual aspect of our disease. And, one other thing I need to talk about that I really haven't talked a whole lot about in meetings, just to let you know, this is much more of a positive note, I'll tell you. But again, this disease, even with many, many years clean, we still have to pay the price. As Bruce died as a direct result of this disease, he had 7 years clean. another friend of mine who I got clean with had been very sick, you know, and her interferon wasn't working for her, and she needed a transplant. And we'd known this for a while, and what happened with me is the thought came into my head about a month ago or so, while I was praying for about a living donor, and I had no idea of anything. You know, I thought, well, I must think, you know, I have to look at it. And what happened is, it turned out she had a fairly rare blood type, and I went and got tested. It turned out I had the same blood type, and I decided this was my message from God. You know, I mean, I talked with my sponsor and some other people, but I got in my head, this was my message from God, and this is what I had to do, you know, and I offered to be a living donor. And it wasn't my message from God. I don't know what it was, you know, but that, you know, it turned out she was too sick. Too sick at that point to take a partial liver. And of course, you know, I had rearranged everything, you know, for the next month, how I could do it. But I got the word Thursday morning before I left to come down here. She got a new liver. This is someone who I was convinced when she got clean. I had almost 90 days when she got clean. And I was absolutely convinced she didn't have a chance of making it. You know, and, she's made it and done much, much better than me, I'm quite sure. You know, and I don't know what it was about in terms of me, in terms of the thoughts that came through my head and all. Somebody told me that it, you know, it was something, the message for me was something else, and I guess I'll figure it out at some point. But, you know, it just made my weekend to know, you know, that she is all right. And anybody who goes to Almost Heaven area convention knows her. And she has been there with that convention. You know, and any event, the thought of, for me, of being able to give something of myself, just, you know, without this fellowship, without Narcotics Anonymous, it would not have ever happened. You know, I would have never even dreamed of something like that. You know, but today it's so different. You know, the biggest gift I can give to somebody is to help somebody, you know, and get away from myself. You know, and without the traditions, this fellowship would not be here. There's no doubt in my mind about that, because, you know, I know through looking at the history, you know, there were a number of times where Narcotics Anonymous type fellowships tried to be formed, you know, before our fellowship as we know it now was formed in 53 in Southern California with Jimmy Kay and a few others. And the reason why what was different with the Narcotics Anonymous was formed in 1953 and the attempts that were made earlier is that the earlier attempts did not have the traditions. And you can see by looking at the history, why those attempts didn't work, why they became, you know, personality cults, became too closely affiliated with other organizations or enterprises. When we applied the traditions, the fellowship worked, it lived, it survived, and it is just barely 50 years later from a group of, you know, 7 or 8 addicts in a somebody's living room or kitchen in Southern California to being a fellowship in well over 100 countries around this world. We can have as many people as we have here in Ocean City every year. And the thousands and thousands and thousands of addicts whose lives have been saved, who have found recovery. And it is, in my mind, without a doubt, the traditions that are the glue that holds us together. It is our unity, our common purpose, and just to talk a little about the sixth tradition, the boundaries that are established with the sixth tradition. We are who we are. It's what keeps our definition and our clarity of our primary purpose, which is carrying the message. And the only message that we have is that it's a message of recovery from addiction through the 12 steps and 12 traditions of this program. That's it. Nothing else. And by not, with this tradition, not affiliating in any way, endorsing, financing any other outside enterprises, it's what keeps that clear and keeps the door open for everybody to come in. I don't know. I mean, I know myself. And I know without the traditions, I would be, we ought to be doing this, we ought to be doing that, we ought to be participating in the outside world, is this rehab better than that rehab, or, do we need rehabs, do we need, what about, what kind of laws are going to be passing about this or that, and the reality would be that what I know I would do is I would quickly establish some sort of list or requirements for membership, meaning that you have to think like I think, believe the way that I believe, vote the way that I vote, and that's not the case, and this fellowship has taught me that, we are people of all stripes, races, creeds, religions, lack of religion, political beliefs, lack of political beliefs. And it is only by keeping our focus exclusively on recovery from addiction that we can carry the message, not simply among people who look or think like me, but among people in, 150 countries around the world. There are, we go into, any place you can think of where there is conflict and there's Narcotics Anonymous, there are members from both sides of those conflicts. The other thing for me, and I like this, our Green and Gold book. When it first came out, I hated it. And I especially hated the part of on the traditions about applying spiritual principles, because I thought that was a bunch of hooey and just something that those people out there put in the book to divert us from how they were destroying our fellowship by some way or other. I don't remember how it was, but, you know, I know that's what we thought. Once again, surprise, when my opinion is run counter to what the group consciousness fellowship is, time has proven that I was wrong and the group conscience was right. And today, the part of the traditions where it talks in this green and gold book about applying spiritual principles is the best part, in my view. You know, imagine that. I was wrong. The group conscience was right. I don't know why it works like that, but it certainly has been proving itself time and time again throughout my recovery. And some of the spiritual principles, well, this one is, in this tradition, is humility. Reminds us of what our place in society is, what our role is, what our primary purpose is, and what it's not. You know, we are not anything more than, you know, a society of recovering addicts. And we have no other role, no other relationship. With society at large, freedom from active addiction is all we have to offer. And there's lots of other good things that could be done, lots of other good things that other people and other groups are doing. But we need to keep our focus on what our purpose is. And I know I would never be able to do that, without having the traditions. And what I do know is any time something is being proposed, for Narcotics Anonymous to do, whether it's whatever it may be, I know what I do is go back and go first to the traditions and see, does this fit in? Does it comport with our traditions? If it does, then we worry about whether or not it's a good or bad idea or should or shouldn't be done. But if it's not consistent with our traditions, it doesn't matter if it's a good idea or not. Because there certainly can talk a lot about good ideas that aren't there. But integrity is another one of the spiritual principles it talks about in our book. That's having the integrity not to be consistent with our message, not to confuse ourselves or confuse others. Singleness of our purpose again. I lost my place. Anyway, and I don't know, but the traditions for me, they mean also what they mean for me also is a way to, apply and live my own life in addition, to Narcotics Anonymous, how they apply here, but how they apply to me and practicing those same spiritual principles. The integrity, the humility, the anonymity, harmony, those principles are all key and things that I, before I got here, had no acquaintance with. They were words that maybe I knew what they said, maybe I knew what they meant, but until I was ready to hear it and understand it. You know, just like for me, before I got here, I had actually had read the basic text a few years before I got here because somebody had given it to me, because in my profession, I refer people very often to treatment or counseling. And somebody said, here, read this book. And I read it, and I thought, this is a great, yeah, this is a good book, you know, and I can refer people there. Didn't mean anything to me personally, you know, even though I knew that if I ever had to take one of those surveys, you know, that my score was going to be off the charts. You know, I wasn't ready to hear the message until I was ready to hear the message. You know, it just, you know, it didn't apply to me. It was something for somebody else. And I just thank God that, you know, when I got here, I was ready to hear it, you know, and I've been able to stay here since and been able to be of some service. Because what I know in my recovery is I show up and y'all find something for me to do. And it may not be what I want to do, but somebody knows better than me what I should be doing. And so I'll keep showing up. Y'all will keep finding things for me to do. And thanks for letting me share it.
Thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks, Jimmy. And introducing our second speaker, Bunny R. All right.
My name is Bunny. I'm an addict. Hi, family. How y'all doing? I'm too excited about being here today. This is my 7th convention. I got 6 years clean. I had came here when I had like 2 weeks. And I remember just jumping in the car, you know, just throwing a couple of bags in there, you know. I just had a few dollars. And they just told me, you know, just come down. I didn't have no registration. I ain't no room, no, you know, nothing, you know. But they just told me, just come on down on faith, you know, that the addicts would be there to help you out, you know. That's what they, you know, that's what the whole purpose is, you know, to help another suffering addict, you know, a newcomer. And so that's what I did. I just threw my stuff in the car, hit the road by myself. And pulled in here. I didn't have a job at the time, you know. I was, you know, only 2 weeks. I mean, you know, the last 4 or 5 years of my addiction, you know, I was basically on the street. You know, down near the last year or so, like especially the last 6 months, you know, I was sleeping in the bushes, you know, around D.C., Maryland state line on Blair Road, Eastern Avenue, you know, right off Georgia Avenue. You know, I was right because I used to hang right there in that whole strip right there. It was only like about a 8 or 9 block radius, you know, where all the shit used to go on. So, I used to just stay there 24/7, you know. And after I blew the car up, I used to just hang down there. So, you know, what happened was I came in and I got another little car, you know, a recovery car, you know, a little hoopty, you know. And so that's what I had. I came down here, man. That's all I had, you know. And, you know, I just showed up, man. And the first thing was I ran into somebody when I walked up out front from Montgomery County. And they said, hey, I said, you know, I'm here, but, I got an energy package, but I ain't got no room to stay in. You know, they didn't have any more rooms, you know, because I must have got down here around 9 o'clock or something like that. And somebody said, well, you can stay in our condo down in Bethany Beach, but you got a car, you can drive us back and forth, you know. So I said, cool, you know. And so that worked out, you know. And next thing you know, I was meeting some people and getting with some people. Some people were taking me around. I met a couple, and they took me to lunch, you know what I mean. And, man, it was just a great experience. I mean, I remember the theme of that convention was spiritually refreshed and glad to be alive, you know. And when I left, I was a different person when I left the convention, you know. I was just that. I was spiritually refreshed and glad to be alive, you know. And I was on the road to recovery. I mean, since that time, you know, I haven't looked back. It's been a beautiful ride. I mean, it's not all peaches and cream, but it's been great. I think they asked me to do this because I do a lot of service, you know. That was one of the things that got me going in the fellowship, getting right in the middle of it. I was under duress from my first higher power, which is Montgomery County Police, you know. They had put me in the system, and I was on probation, you know what I mean? But prior to me getting here, to hearing the message, you know, they had me on urinalysis, but I could never give them a clean urine, you know, for months. So finally, PO said, you got to do something, you know, or so I'm going to put you back in front of the judge. So I went into a treatment facility, you know, and that's when I first heard the first message, Narcotics Anonymous, through H&I, you know, and they brought a meeting in, and from that point, I knew that there was another way. It was a way out. I thought I was going to die out there on the streets. I have so many family members that died as a direct result of this disease, you know, and on both sides, my mother's and my father's. So, you know, it was just like, it seemed like it was just going to be automatic for me. You know, that was just like, you know, that was what's in the cards for me. You know, my father died of kidney failure. You know, several people on my mother's side died. So I just knew that, you know, many times out there on the street, I just gave up hope, you know. I just said, man, this is the way I'm going to live. This is the way I'm going to die, you know, just like everybody else in my family, right? And, you know, when I first heard the message of Narcotics Anonymous, I knew I could, you know, I knew I could make it because the guy was standing there. He was sitting there telling my story. He looked just like me, kind of talked like me, same kind of street lingo, the same mannerisms, all like that. And I said, hey, man, you know, if this guy can do it, I can do it. Now, I don't remember all the different things he said, you know, all the different spiritual principles, all that kind of stuff like that at that point. You know what I mean? I just knew that just looking at this guy was an example of a person that used like I did, you know. You know, he was talking about smoking crack, you know, I did that, you know, drinking, you know, snorting heroin, all that stuff, you know. So, you know, I said, man, you know, there is a way out. I couldn't believe it, man, but I was like, God, man, he can do it, I can do it. When I got out of there, I went to all the meetings in the world, but I didn't get no sponsor. I ain't no sponsor, you know. I just thought that if I just went to all the meetings, just heard what y'all said, you know, that I could take it back and apply it in my life and do it, you know, without actually becoming a part of y'all. You know, just let me hear about these steps and the things you all did, and I can take it and apply it in my life, and I can make it. Because, you know, I've done a lot of things in my life, you know, before it got bad. You know, I went to college, I got a college degree, and a lot of things like that. So I figure, you know, in my mind, I figure I don't need to do all the things y'all do, that I can just take with the information and apply it myself, you know. And it didn't work, man. It didn't work. After 90 days, you know, I was right back out there, you know. And that last 90 days, that second time when I went out there, man, it was brutal. Because I got a head full of Narcotics Anonymous, right? You know, I got all the information. My sponsor says you hear about just about everything you need to hear in 90 days. If you go to 90 meetings in 90 days, you're going to hear just about everything in Narcotics Anonymous that you need to hear. You know what I mean? Or, you know, there is. And I just kept hearing y'all's voices and seeing y'all's faces. You know what I mean? And so it was bad. I really didn't get high, you know. I was argumentative. You know, I used to drink a lot, man. And when I drink, I'm crazy. You know, I'm crazy as shit, you know. And so I was really mad last time, and they were mad at me for coming back. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I'd done the thing where I showed up down there on the street, you know, a couple of times and stood on the corner and showed them how good I look now. You know, the first 90 days, you know, after about, you know, 60 days, I went and hung out with them because I like to stand on the corner and talk shit, you know, joke. And, I'm a funny guy. I was saying today, most of the time, you know, when I share, you know, I can't ever remember, or the funny stuff doesn't really come out, you know what I mean? But, you know, you catch me on the side, you know, a lot of, so that's what I like to do. Stand on the corner, talk shit, make everybody laugh, you know, Joan, talk about people, all that kind of stuff, right? But last, you know, I was out there that last time, you know, I was drinking, I was mad, man. And, you know, and some of the things I was saying to people, you know, wasn't just funny. It was like meant to hurt, right? And so what happened was one of the young dudes, caught me, you know, I'm dead drunk. He caught me and punched me dead in my face, man, knocked my teeth out. You know what I mean? That was a wake up call for me, man, you know. Cause I used to joan on all everybody, you know, they used to hang on the street. They ain't have, you know, their teeth, everybody ain't have all their teeth, right? Niggas I used to hang with, right? I used to hang with a lot of heroin addicts, right? Now methadone and all that stuff. Then crack addicts too, shit, man, you know what I mean? And I hadn't lost mine yet. I used to talk about them all the time, you know, and joke. We laughed. They were my, you know, were my buddies, my get high buddies, you know, but I used to talk about them. You know, I tell them, you know, it's 10 people out here, ain't but 5 teeth, you know. You know what I'm saying? You know, all that kind of stuff like that, right? You know. But the last time out there, man, you know, I got my my teeth knocked out. So now I was joining their fellowship now, you know what I'm saying? The thing about it is that, you know, most of those people I was hanging with had been arrested and done time before. You know what I mean? I was one of the few that was around there that hadn't done time yet. But I started a pattern of getting arrested and they had all these charges, right? So, you know, so I was on the way and they were preparing me. You know, I had sponsors on the street to prepare me for going to jail. They said, man, you're going to be all right, man. You know, just be yourself, you know. Some people telling me, man, just go up there and find the baddest motherfucker and whip his ass, man. And you know what I'm saying? Then, you know, everybody else leave you alone. And I'm looking at this motherfucker, I said, this motherfucker trying to get me killed. And shit. But this is, you know what I'm saying? You know, so I ain't want to listen to that sponsor. But, you know what I'm saying? But the point is that I was preparing myself to join that fellowship, you know, of, you know, of, people who had done time, man. You know, I was preparing myself, you know, to really, you know, then that was the last thing that kept, you know, that was keeping me kind of a little bit separated from them, you know what I mean? And so I felt like if I did that, man, I'd really be initiated into the streets fully, you know what I mean? It's a full initiation now, right? But I, you know, thought twice about that, man. I said, I don't think I really, really want to go to jail. At that time, man, I started to get older, man. I'm starting to get a little older now. I ain't really trying to go up in there, you know what I'm saying? And it wasn't, and once I had known that y'all were here, there was no reason for me to go, man. There was really no reason. I knew that if I came back and applied myself, man, I didn't have to do that. And, so that's what I did. As a matter of fact, you know, I had gone back to the treatment center a couple of times because there was a young lady there and I was taking her some cigarettes and stuff, you know, but meanwhile, as soon as I leave there, I was getting high, you know, I mean, just dropping off cigarettes for her. And I saw one of the guys. I said, man, I'm thinking about coming back here. You know, one of the guys that worked there. I said, I think I'm going to come back here and, you know, coming in for relapse traps, right? He said, man, Bunny, man, all you got to do is get back in the rooms, man, and do the things that you need to do, man. You know, you just need to get back in the rooms and apply yourself, man. Stop using, get a sponsor, and work the program. Work the program. And I, you know, and I thought about that. I kept thinking about that. Now, I didn't stop right away, but that just, you know, just in my mind, in my head, man, all the time for about the next couple of weeks. And I knew that I had to do something because I was about to, you know, my probation officer was about to, you know, put me in front of the judge, which she in fact did. She was putting me back in front of the judge, but so I knew I had to do something. So I got back in the rooms. I got a sponsor finally. And I started working the program. One of the first things he suggested within the, as soon as I came back from this convention was to get in service. And our readings right there just talked about, you know, in the 12 traditions, talking about, the tradition is, you know, it comes slowly over a period of time. And it's not until we get involved in service that somebody points out unity and stuff like that. And that's the first tradition, unity. And it really, you know, a lot of times, you know, I thank God all the time for the fact that I got involved with service, because the traditions, without being involved with service, I don't think the traditions a lot of times mean a lot to a lot of folks. You know what I mean? They're more interested in the steps. But what happened, being in service, like within the first 60 days, I had to start applying the traditions, you know, in my service work. Now, I had a type of job that I had to, that after a period of time, after a short period of time, I had to start applying the traditions in my work world. You know what I mean? And they work well. The traditions work well in other areas of our lives, you know. In fact, for the first year, I think the traditions helped me more than the actual steps, because I was able to apply, you know, all 12 and the spiritual principles out of all 12 traditions. And it, you know, it wasn't like you can't be on this tradition yet or anything like that, right? You know, so I could use the traditions, all of them, right away. You know what I mean? Unity in my work world, you know, in my workplace. Minding my own business, like outside issues, you know what I'm saying? You know, I'm minding my own business at work, all those type of things like that. But also right here in the fellowship, I was learning how to get along, because we had group consciousnesses we had to deal with, you know. I was a chairperson of a meeting, man, so a lot of different conflicts would go on. So I was, you know, immediately learning the traditions, all 12 of them. You know, as opposed to all. Now, the other thing is that my sponsor, you know, he was one of the ones that, you know, he wouldn't, I had to do service. But one thing about it is that, he really wasn't going to sponsor me. One thing about it is that after I got involved with service for a little while, service got into me. Next thing you know, I had like several service positions, you know what I mean, at about three or four groups. And at one time, it's a little crazy, but at one time I had six service positions. Now, some of them were H&I, so they were only like once a month. But I was heavily involved with service. One of the meeting that I chaired was a Step in Tradition meeting. So we would cover traditions every month, a couple of times a month. So, you know, I was getting the information, and I had to apply it too. Now, this tradition has to do with, and you notice a lot of times in our area, Montgomery County, we will talk about that treatment center we have and we'll name it, right? But our traditions tell us, this tradition, sixth tradition, says that we should not name it the treatment center, you know, because then it's implied that we are endorsing this treatment center. Because if you think about it, as a newcomer, if you're sitting there and you're hearing about a treatment center at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and a lot of times you say, well, damn, you know, maybe I should, you know, they're saying that I should go to this treatment center. It's like you're endorsing it, you know what I'm saying? So that's why I just say treatment center now instead of what I used to say. I used to name it, right? And the reason is because if something negative goes down with that treatment center, and in some people's mind, we're connected to that treatment center, then they'll think negative about us. You know, they'll just lump us all together. You know what I mean? So that's the key to that tradition right there is just to keep us from, from bogged down into unnecessary chaos and just what it says, divert us from our primary purpose. I was getting ready to come over here today earlier and getting dressed, and I was thinking about putting on my nice new Jordan outfit, right? But for me, if you're a sick addict like me, you know what I mean? I was like, man, I don't need to do that to get ready to go over here to speak right now, because that's going to divert me from my primary purpose. You know what I mean? I'm going to be on image time and shit. You know what I mean? I'm going to be up here being all cute and shit with my brand new outfit on, you know, my matching hat and all that, man. I said, I just need to put on a T-shirt and a pair of jeans and go over here and just be me. You know what I mean? And not get diverted from my primary purpose by prestige or image or anything else, you know. It talks about money, property, and prestige, but you know what I mean? So that, you know, I know that a lot of times when I share at other meetings and I'm dressed, you know, a lot of times I'm not going to give you all of me, you know. I'm not going to strip myself naked and give you, you know, my shortcomings or my vulnerabilities, you know, because I'm on image time, you know what I'm saying? But if I'm just me, now I got that from a good friend of mine, Eric, you know, who one day I picked him up and was taking him to share at one of the meetings. And he was saying, hey, man, you know, a lot of times, man, I got clothes and stuff. But when I go to a meeting, man, you know, I go for a purpose. And he said, a lot of times I just put on a T-shirt and some sweatpants, man, so that I can just come in here, be me, strip myself down and deliver the message, right? Or get a message, you know, so I don't have to, you know, be on some image time. That's the way I am, man. So, I mean, I'm really, these traditions help me in my personal life, You know what I mean? It helped me in all my affairs. I put on this. Now, as soon as we get finished, I'm gonna go put it on because I spent a few dollars for it. You know what I mean? I'm getting better. You know, I ain't all the way there, but I'm getting better. You see what I'm saying? But yeah, man. But a couple of things I want to touch on here with the traditions. In the beginning, it says, and I was doing some reading, right? And I was going back to predecessors, some of the literature there, and it talked about how it happened, you know, how the 12 traditions came about. They had a world service office, and they developed a newsletter. And they put the newsletter out where people would write in on how to handle stuff, right? Because they didn't have the 12 traditions in place yet. They just had steps, right? And so many different things were coming back, you know what I mean, about different things coming up, about, you know, their affiliations with different organizations, medical organizations, religious organizations, and how we should deal with it. They didn't really know how to deal with it, right? So they kept asking the World Service Office questions, the World Office questions. So what happened was over a period of time, you know, through the help of that newsletter, and they had like piles and piles of communications from the groups, you know, because the groups are, you know, it's an upside down triangle, pyramid, I should say, and all the groups are at the top, and the World Service Office, you know, just supports the group, you know. So they were trying to help them with all the different issues. So over time, they figured, they said, hey, we got enough stuff here that we can try to put some kind of guidelines in place, you know. And so that's how they started putting it together. They started looking at all the different, some groups would write back about solutions, you know, that they had come up with certain problems that was in the newsletter, right? We'd go out and then the groups would write back, this is how we solve. And then this is how we dealt with it based on spiritual principles, right? And so over time, it's over years, you know, and over a lot of hard-won experience, a lot of addicts died, you know what I mean? A lot of groups failed, you know. That's what they say right here in our readings, a hard-won experience because they didn't know what to do. They were in a learning process. This was a trial and error process. You know, it was like a learn by fire process. So they developed them, you know, and the service office put them in place. And since then, they've helped our fellowship stay alive and free. Just is what it says. And they are not rules and regulations. Okay, they are traditions. It says right here in the beginning of our book too, and it works high and wide, the 12 traditions, it says, this book seeks to explore the spiritual principles within the traditions. Engage members with the spirit, not the law. It says, of the traditions, and provide a basis for thought and discussion about the traditions. So they knew, one thing they knew is that if they set rules and regulations, you know, that was going to create big problems, divisions. You know, people would fight over rules. Almost by definition, an addict, you know, rebels against rules and regulations. You know what I'm saying? So they had the foresight to see that we better call these traditions. You know what I mean? Not rules and regulations. You know, so well, we're talking about traditions now. Okay. Now, in tradition six, and Jimmy touched on the spiritual principles, but I basically covered it. It's simple. It's a lot in it, but it's simple. You know, in order for us to fulfill our primary purpose, number five sets number six up. Tradition five says that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addicts who still suffers. Primary purpose, right? Now, in six, it's really telling us how to fulfill that primary purpose without effing it up, basically, you know, and how to keep it focused on our primary purpose. That's really what it's talking about, staying focused on our primary purpose. And that's what I was talking about today when I was, you know, coming over here, getting ready to put on some clothes and get off. I need to stay focused on what we do. Now, the deal with Narcotics Anonymous is that we just want to do one thing. If we focus on one thing, keep our eyes and our goals on one thing, and we do it well, then that's all we need to do. We don't need to align ourselves with others to get, you know, to feel like we're getting, recognition or anything like that. Okay, that we by ourselves do a good enough job helping addicts stay clean. That's all we need. That's all we need. Our reputation, you know. We don't need another tradition talks about we don't need to promote it. Our reputation speaks for ourselves. We don't need to. And if we get caught up with, you know how it is, man. You ever seen a family, man, when, you know, what people are, you know. You ever seen a family when somebody dies, what happens when the money part come up? You know what I'm saying? It's division. It splits people. You know what I mean? So we don't need to get, you know, involved with the money piece, which is sets up the next tradition, right? The seventh tradition, you know what I mean? But money, property, prestige, you know, speaking of that, I found one of the things that they found out early on with this tradition is that, again, it sets up the seventh tradition, is that if we stay poor, this is the words they use, the predecessors, then we stay focused on just helping the addicts, you know. When we gather up a whole bunch of money, you know, people, then we got to figure out what to do with all the money and this and that and the other. So we need to just basically just, you know, everybody put a dollar in the basket. It's enough to keep the organization running for coffee, whatever we need, and that's all we need, you know, just to carry enough to keep carrying the message to the addict who still suffers. Okay. So, you know, basically that's it in a nutshell. There's a couple of things in here, and then I'm going to talk about some personal stuff real quick, because Jimmy touched on something too that kind of close to what I'm going through right now. Somebody, you know, is having some trouble there with their health, but I just wanted to touch on, I'll just sum up, just read the last paragraph, and then we'll close with that. Within the limits established by Tradition 6, we have tremendous freedom to carry the message of recovery and help other addicts. We have clear boundaries set by our identity as Narcotics Anonymous. When we take care to observe those boundaries, our outside relationships enhance our ability to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, rather than diverting us from our primary purpose. So again, that sums it up in a nutshell. I had a before I came down here, I got a call too on Thursday that one of my favorite aunts had died. She was died as a result of the disease. I don't know exactly what the autopsy report is going to reveal, but I know that she only had one kidney, and because she had given one of her sons. When he was in his 20s, and that's about 20 years ago, and he decided to drink anyway, and he died, you know. And so she, you know, she only had one kidney, but she decided to continue smoking and drinking. And her second son died of cirrhosis of the liver about 10 years ago, you know. And she was my favorite aunt. She was my mother's youngest sister. I had, and during my addiction, you know, I had gone down there and we had snorted cocaine together and stuff like that. Every time I went there, we would drink because she was a bootlegger in the neighborhood in D.C., right in the heart of D.C. by Cadoza High School down by 13th, 14th and Gerard Street, you know. And, but, you know, we always had, you know, fun. But I remember one time she gave me some money to buy my mother a birthday present. And it never happened, you know. I took the money. You know, it was like $220. I took the money and bought crack and got high with it. You know? And I've been saying for all these 6 years that I've been clean that one of these days I'm going to go down there, take her money, and make amends, right? Ninth step. And recently, not too long ago, my sponsor had talked to me about that. He said, you need to get down there. He didn't say it specifically her, but he said you need to take care of your ninth step amends because time is running out for some people, you know. And I really didn't take it that seriously, but I knew I had to get down there. And then it just hit me like a bolt of lightning, man, when they called me and told me that she was gone. And I had just shared about it a couple of Sundays ago that I needed to get there and take her money and make the amends. And I just wanted to mention that because, you know, it's troubling me the past several days because I could have been down there and done that before she died, before she passed on. And it didn't happen. And, anybody that, has people especially in your family that, and you're working a ninth step with your sponsor, you know, you might want to take a look at getting down there, but, and doing that. Right now I'm really feeling pretty bad. So I guess I just wanted to take a moment and recognize her, you know, more or less tell her if she's listening up there or wherever that I love her and I'm sorry for the damage I caused her. And, I just wanted to do that, you know, just to mention that for a minute. But I hope you all have a great weekend. I'm just going to leave it right there. Thanks for letting me share. My name is Bunny.